The story cracks open on a humid night when radio chatter shifts across Trinidad's north coast. Pilots report a new signal cutting through the channel. Fishermen say they saw patrol boats where none used to be. No warning, no debate. Only a quiet shift in the air, like someone changed the rules without saying a word. By dawn, the first images leak. Tall masts, shielded panels, foreign uniforms moving equipment across a fenced-off ridge. The government calls it cooperation. The opposition calls it secrecy. People in the hills call it something they were never asked about. Across the region, analysts scramble to understand why a small island suddenly hosts high-power surveillance gear. Every question leads to another locked door. Every explanation feels partial. Tension spreads faster than answers. Trinidad and Tobago is now a frontline state, whether anyone admits it or not. And in the days ahead, pressure rises from every direction. Chapter 1, The Reveal. The first reports surface just after sunrise. A coastal radio station reads a short item pulled from an overnight bulletin. It mentions radar structures on a hill outside Blanchisseuse and an unspecified number of U.S. personnel assisting with maritime monitoring. The language is dry and controlled. It says nothing about when the equipment arrived or who signed off on it. Still, the news hits hard. People hear what is missing before they hear what is said. By 8 in the morning, a handful of fishermen gather near the jetty. They talk about a new exclusion zone set 2 days earlier. They describe a patrol boat moving along the boundary with lights off. None of them received a briefing. They only know that someone told them to stop approaching a stretch of coastline they have worked for decades. One man says he heard American accents shouting from the deck of a vessel he did not recognize. Another says he saw boxes marked with foreign codes carried up the hillside. The government releases its first statement at mid-morning. It frames the radar deployment as a collaborative effort to strengthen maritime security and support counter-narcotics operations. The statement contains no dates, no locations, no details on the nature of the equipment, and no explanation for why the installation remained unknown until fishermen reported restricted waters. It stresses sovereignty and partnership, repeating those words until the message feels rehearsed. There is no mention of foreign personnel carrying firearms. By noon, the opposition demands an emergency briefing. Their spokesperson steps before cameras and asks why the public was informed through secondhand sources. He calls for the full memorandum of understanding, which no one has seen. Allegations of secrecy dominate the early headlines. He states that nothing has been proven regarding long-term basing rights, but the lack of clarity fuels anxiety. He warns that Trinidad cannot risk drifting into a military posture that reshapes regional balance. Regional analysts begin weighing in by afternoon. A security researcher from Barbados notes that the radar architecture resembles systems used for wide-area maritime tracking. She says it suggests a deeper strategic purpose than routine cooperation. She stresses that her analysis is based on public photos and cannot confirm the operational capability. Another voice from Jamaica says the installation raises concerns about information sharing and chain of command. He points out that small states are pressured into arrangements they cannot fully control. In Port of Spain, the air feels heavier as the day moves on. Journalists chase leads across ministries. Civil servants say little. One aide claims the installation has been planned for months. Another insists it was fast-tracked due to rising smuggling patterns. None provide documentation. Confusion grows because every explanation competes with another. The silence around the details gives the story its weight. Late afternoon brings a sharp shift. A retired Coast Guard officer agrees to speak off record. He says he visited the area 2 nights earlier and saw 2 radar dishes tilted toward the western horizon. He describes a small group of U.S. Marines setting up perimeter lighting. He says this kind of configuration is designed for broad detection zones, but he cannot say what range it holds. He believes the government wanted the installation quiet until all equipment was operational. His account is unconfirmed and stands as a personal observation. Still, his description adds urgency. As evening falls, tension spreads along the coastline. Residents climb the hillside trails, hoping to see what is there. They find fresh fencing, gravel paths, and 2 vehicles with diplomatic plates. they observe a glow coming from behind tarped structures. No one answers questions. The guards tell them the site is restricted. People walk back down the hill uneasy, carrying more doubt than certainty. The story is no longer local by nightfall. Regional broadcasters run the headlines in quick succession. Some discuss the potential link to broader U.S. operations in the Caribbean. Others point out increasing geopolitical friction with Venezuela. Analysts emphasize what is proven and what is not. No official source confirms that the radar points toward the mainland. No official source denies it either. In the capital, members of parliament meet privately. They are not unified. Some see the installation as necessary protection. Others fear long-term dependence. A few argue that Trinidad risks becoming a strategic asset in disputes that do not belong to it. The meeting ends without a statement. The silence signals uncertainty inside the government itself. Close to midnight, the first widespread public reaction begins taking shape. People talk about sovereignty. They talk about transparency. They want answers that do not rely on vague security language. The radar site feels larger than its physical size. It represents decisions made out of sight with consequences still unclear. As the night settles in, the core question stands with more weight than when the day began. No one knows the full reason for the installation or why the public was kept outside the process. The coastline has changed. The balance inside the country has shifted. Every hour that passes without clarity deepens the pressure. Chapter 2, The Pressure Lines. The leaked slides appeared just after dawn. A reporter posts three grainy images from an anonymous source. The slides show diagrams of a long-range coastal radar node with extended sweep arcs stretching far past Trinidad's territorial waters. The labels are blurred, but the outlines are clear enough to raise new questions. The reporter states she cannot verify the origin of the slides, only that they match the structures photographed on the hillside the previous day. She adds that intelligence experts she contacted declined to comment. The leak lands harder than expected because it fills the silence the government left open. Within hours, civil society groups hold a press gathering outside the Red House. They stand under the heat, reading statements that call for transparency. Their tone is sharp and controlled. They argue that the installation affects national sovereignty and public trust. They question the chain of authority that approved foreign personnel operating inside restricted areas. They demand the release of any agreements tied to the radar. Their statements avoid speculation, but they stress that secrecy creates its own danger. By mid-morning, interviews begin with maritime law experts. One professor explains that any foreign-operated surveillance system requires clear oversight structures. He notes that if data flows outside national control, the state exposes itself to strategic vulnerabilities. He emphasizes that nothing is proven regarding data transmission, but the lack of an open framework invites concern. Another expert points out that Caribbean states have historically faced pressure during security partnerships. She cites past agreements where information sharing policies were never fully disclosed to the public. Her remarks add context but avoid conclusions. Together, the interviews show a pattern of uncertainty surrounding accountability. Regional tension sharpens by noon. Security officials from several islands speak cautiously in public forums. One senior officer from Barbados says the installation may change how neighboring states coordinate maritime operations. He warns that alignment with a major power can pull smaller states into broader disputes. His concern centers on rising friction between the United States and Venezuela. He stresses that nothing links the radar directly to that conflict, but its location raises understandable unease. A St. Vincent official echoes the sentiment, saying that regional security cannot rely on unilateral decisions by one state. His message is diplomatic, but firm. Meanwhile, pressure grows inside Trinidad's energy sector. Industry insiders meet privately to discuss potential fallout. The sector depends heavily on regional stability and foreign investment. Executives worry that the radar's presence could trigger strategic discomfort for companies with cross-border interests. One senior figure says the installation may appear to tilt the island's position in regional politics. He states he has no evidence of a long-term shift, but fears perceptions alone can change investment behavior. His view reflects economic anxiety rather than confirmed risk. By early afternoon, journalists push harder for government confirmation of the radar's range and purpose. Officials offer no specifics. A spokesperson repeats that the installation supports maritime interdiction and enhances national defense. When pressed about data control, he declines to answer. When asked if U.S. Marines are armed, he says all personnel are operating under established protocols. The statement offers reassurance without detail. It leaves every substantive question untouched. The press conference ends with more unanswered inquiries than resolved ones. The public mood tightens through the day. Rumors circulate, carrying a mix of real concern and imagined danger. People argue about the implications in coffee shops and on bus routes. Some welcome the installation as added protection in a dangerous region. Others see it as a quiet shift toward dependency. Many simply want clarity. The tension lies not in confirmed facts, but in the vacuum between them. Late afternoon brings a new development. A regional journalist shares satellite images showing earthworks and vehicle tracks near the radar site from 1 month earlier. The tracks suggest construction activity predating any public awareness. A retired military engineer reviews the images and says the pattern matches rapid deployment teams trained for modular installation. He stresses that his analysis is visual and cannot prove the equipment's capability. His remarks feed the growing belief that the installation was planned in secrecy long before the public was informed. As evening approaches, civil society groups escalate their pressure. They announce a national forum to address security partnerships and foreign presence. Their goal is to open discussion, not inflame tensions. Still, the timing signals that the issue will not fade. They argue that Trinidad's security posture affects the entire region. Their tone is steady but urgent, shaped by the belief that silence is no longer acceptable. Inside government circles, unease grows. Senior officials debate whether to disclose more information. Some fear that full transparency could expose internal disagreements. Others argue that withholding facts will deepen suspicion. A minister notes that the country cannot afford to project uncertainty. No decision is reached. The divide expands quietly, adding its own pressure line beneath the public crisis. Night settles over the island as the questions shift from what was installed to why it was done in secrecy. Analysts across the region begin piecing together a broader context. They note the rise in U.S. security initiatives in the hemisphere. They point out that the Caribbean's strategic role has grown as global powers compete for maritime positioning. They avoid claiming that Trinidad has entered a new alignment, but they say the radar fits into patterns affecting the entire region. Their commentary tightens the atmosphere rather than easing it. The energy sector meets again behind closed doors. Executives examine potential impacts on cross-border pipelines and offshore exploration rights. They discuss how regional partners may interpret the radar's range. Some worry about future negotiations with neighboring states. No one presents proof of immediate consequences. The concerns remain hypotheticals shaped by shifting geopolitical winds. Still, the fact that these discussions occur at all shows how deeply the radar story has penetrated national life. By late night, a quiet understanding spreads across Trinidad. Something fundamental has changed. Not just the coastline, not just the security posture, but the perception of who controls the island's strategic decisions. The unanswered questions feel heavier than the confirmed facts. The pressure lines from politics, economics, and regional dynamics converge in ways the country has not faced in years. Chapter 3, The Fault Line. The pressure breaks before dawn. After 2 days of rising questions, the government announces that Parliament will address the radar issue in a full session. The statement arrives with no details. It signals urgency without clarity. By morning, the Red House is surrounded by reporters and citizens who want answers the government has avoided giving. The air feels charged. People stand close to the gates, waiting for something concrete. Inside, tension builds as ministers take their seats. The Prime Minister opens with a controlled tone. He confirms the presence of U.S. radar systems and acknowledges a limited deployment of foreign personnel. He says the equipment strengthens maritime security and supports long-standing cooperation. He insists that no sovereignty has been surrendered. The chamber is quiet, but the silence does not signal agreement. When pressed on operational range, he offers general statements about regional safety. When asked about data access, he says all arrangements follow established protocols. Noticeably, he does not describe what those protocols are. Members of the opposition rise in quick succession. They demand the full text of the security agreements. They point to past arrangements that were never debated openly. They stress that this situation goes beyond routine cooperation. One MP asks directly whether the radar's sweep extends into Venezuelan waters. The Prime Minister avoids a definitive answer. He repeats that the system enhances maritime stability. The non-response lands harder than a denial. Outside the chamber, regional diplomats hold a quiet meeting in a nearby office. They represent several Caribbean states unsettled by Trinidad's sudden shift. Their discussion centers on autonomy. They agree that regional security must be transparent to maintain trust. One diplomat says the radar could affect how neighboring countries manage their own maritime policies. Another warns that such installations can pull small states toward larger powers after the fact, not by choice. No one states that Trinidad has altered regional balance, but the worry sits unspoken between them. By midday, new information emerges. A technical review by an independent analyst uses location data and elevation measurements to estimate the radar's reach. His findings suggest it extends deep into the Gulf of Paria and possibly beyond. He presents the analysis as an assessment based on geography, not classified insight. His work avoids speculation, yet it confirms the scale that officials have avoided discussing. The report spreads fast. It tightens the atmosphere around Parliament. Back inside, debate intensifies. Government ministers argue that regional threats require robust tools. They frame the installation as a necessary response to trafficking networks. The opposition counters that partnership does not excuse secrecy. One MP states that trust cannot exist without transparency. He warns that any foreign-operated security platform carries long-term consequences. His tone is firm and controlled, shaped by the belief that the country is being reshaped in ways no one voted on. Late afternoon brings a turning point. A former intelligence official agrees to an interview with national media. He says these kinds of radar systems can create reliance on external partners. He stresses that this is not inherently negative, but it changes a nation's strategic posture. He warns that once a country enters such arrangements, it becomes difficult to step back without cost. His comments stand as expert perspective, not allegation, yet they sharpen the public's sense of uncertainty. Meanwhile, regional diplomats conclude their meeting. They prepare a confidential communication urging clarity and cooperation. Their goal is to preserve regional unity. They fear that if small states drift into fragmented security arrangements, they risk becoming tools in larger conflicts. The diplomats emphasize that they respect Trinidad's sovereignty. Their message is caution, not confrontation. Still, the fact that such a communication exists underscores how far the radar issue has already reached. Night begins to settle as the parliamentary session closes. There is no full disclosure of documents, no detailed explanation of data control, no confirmation or denial of extended range surveillance. The government promises an oversight committee. The opposition calls it insufficient. Citizens leave the gates with questions they brought with them in the morning. The session resolves little. People sense that the truth sits behind locked rooms. The country grows quieter, but not calmer. Energy experts warn that regional partners may interpret Trinidad's silence as alignment. They note that perception can shift negotiations, even when no policy has changed. Business leaders worry that geopolitical tension may cloud future deals. No immediate consequences appear, but the anxiety reflects how deeply the radar installation has pressed into national life. Across the Caribbean, analysts track developments. Some say the installation signals a new era of regional security shaped by outside powers. Others argue that Trinidad is navigating pressures beyond its control. They agree only on the uncertainty. The radar's presence turns the island into a strategic point in a contest still unfolding. What that means for the future remains unsettled. As midnight approaches, the coastline is quiet. The radar towers stand against the dark sky. Their presence reshapes how the island sees itself. The installation is no longer a question of equipment. It is a symbol of decisions made far from public view, decisions that carry weight far into the future.